The one-year anniversary of the Fukushima disaster, we speak with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear and our weekly Earth Minute. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headline.
Soldier was killed today when Taliban fighters opened fire on an Afghan delegation holding a memorial service for the 16 villagers massacred by a U.S. soldier. Two brothers of President Hamid Karzai were part of the delegation but were reportedly unhurt. The attack came as students in eastern Afghanistan staged the first significant protest in response to Sunday's shootings. President Obama said despite the killings, the U.S. shouldn't, quote, rush for the exit in Afghanistan.
Obviously, what happened this weekend is absolutely heartbreaking and tragic. And I expressed directly to President Karzai how the American people feel anytime innocent civilians, especially children, are killed.
Iraq War Veterans, the Answer Coalition, and others will rally at noon today at the downtown federal building in Los Angeles, calling for an immediate end to the Afghan war. They say the weekend killing of Afghan villagers is but the latest in a decade-long history of atrocities carried out by the U.S. and other NATO troops. Israel halted its airstrikes on the Gaza Strip early today. Rocket fire from Gaza on Israel was tapering off. The ceasefire was brokered by Egypt. 25 Palestinians were killed and dozens injured, including civilians. 8 Israelis were injured by rocket fire in the 4 days of clashes. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Syrian government forces will not stop fighting and withdraw from their positions unless rebel forces instantly do the same. Lavrov held bilateral talks with Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton on the Syria conflict. They came to no agreement. Before that, Lavrov spoke out on the issue at the UN Security Council.
There is no doubt whatsoever that the Syrian authorities bear a huge share of responsibility for the current situation. But one shouldn't ignore the fact that for a long time now, they've been fighting not unarmed men, but combat units, such as the so-called Free Syrian Army and extremist groups, including Al-Qaeda, which have lately committed a series of murderous terrorist acts.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The Los Angeles Unified School District Board is considering drastic cuts and a hefty parcel tax at its meeting today. The nation's second largest school district faces a daunting $390 million budget deficit. Schools Chief John Daisy has proposed a series of cuts, including eliminating adult education, arts programs, librarians, cafeteria workers, and the highly successful academic decathlon program. Daisy also is proposing a $298 a year, 5-year parcel tax. It would raise about $255 million annually. But the tax would need a 2/3 vote for passage. In 2010, LAUSD asked voters to approve a $100 annual parcel tax. Voters rejected it. The district already has sent layoff warning notices to more than 11,700 employees. The teachers' union, UTLA, parents and students are expected to pack this afternoon's 1 p.m. board meeting to oppose the cuts. LAUSD board members unveiled 2 proposals yesterday they say would better protect students from sexual predators in the schools. Ernesto Arce reports.
LAUSD board members urged their colleagues to support changes that they say will make it faster and less costly to remove teachers who have been charged with a crime. They say the recent string of high-profile sexual misconduct cases forces the district to act. Tamar Gladson is a school board member who supports the changes that she says will better protect children.
There have been several disgusting and tragic allegations of sexual abuse and misconduct. There has been a breach of trust in our district.
At least 7 district staff members have been arrested on suspicion of sexual misconduct and other criminal acts. The district has launched 11 investigations since a highly publicized sex abuse case at Miramonte Elementary in South LA was made public. Gallatin blames state legislators for refusing to change the state education code in order to reduce the appeal length process. The district's demands would have also allowed the LAUSD to cease paying teachers accused of wrongdoing. Under the new proposal entitled Protecting Children in the Classroom, the process to fire could be done in a fraction of the time. Board member Yuri Martinez says parents and students welcome the changes.
Parents don't care or to understand the bureaucracy or the red tape that occurs in our district. They just want to make sure that we're communicating with them and being straightforward as to why they weren't notified to begin with.
United Teachers of Los Angeles says it supports the proposals, but insists that the district is responsible for misconduct because of the lack of oversight due to budget cuts and understaffing. In Los Angeles, I'm Ernesto Arce, Pacifica Radio, KPFK.
I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on KPFK.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We are now going to turn our attention to Fukushima. It is the one-year anniversary. On Friday, March 11th, 2011, a magnitude 9.0 undersea earthquake occurred off the coast of Japan. It was the most powerful known to have hit Japan and one of the five most powerful earthquakes in the world since modern record began keeping in 1900. Modern record keeping began. Following these earthquakes, the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant experienced a series of equipment failures, nuclear meltdowns, and the release of radioactive material. It was the largest nuclear disaster since the Chernobyl disaster of 1986, and indeed, some say that it was even larger than Chernobyl in terms of the impact. Also, at first, Japanese authorities said the accident was a level 4 on the international nuclear event scale, even though many outside agencies and organizations believed it was a lot higher than that. Eventually, though, the scale was raised to a 5 and then to a 7, the highest level. We're now going to hear a clip of an interview with Arne Gunderson, who is a nuclear power expert. Arne was very much giving us information as while the crisis was happening. And this is an interview he did with Russia Today just recently, marking the one-year anniversary.
A year ago in Japan, a huge tsunami triggered a major nuclear tragedy when it hit the Fukushima power plant, leaving about 19,000 dead or missing. And on the first anniversary, thousands around the world gathered to protest against the use of atomic energy. Demonstrators in South Korea and France were calling for atomic power to be phased out. And in Japan, mourners gathered in the city of Sendai in remembrance of the disaster and to discuss what's being achieved a year after the tragedy. We're now joined live from Vermont by Arnold Gunderson, his energy advisor at Fairwinds Associates. Very warm welcome to the program. So there are reports that even though the plant is now shut down, fusion products such as uranium are still generating heat. So what is the status of the plant right now and the nearby city?
Good morning and thanks for having me. The heat is being generated and will be generated for years to come, not from fission, but from the splitting of the atoms that occurred in years past. All those atoms are still radioactive, and as they decay, they're going to generate heat for many years to come. There's contamination out at least 30 kilometers, and in some areas, perhaps as high as 60 kilometers, where people should not ever return. In addition, I was just in Tokyo and took five samples, and those five samples were high enough to qualify as radioactive waste here in North America.
So it means that you do admit that there are some problems. Does that mean that the government is undisclosing some facts from people, and why so?
I think the government has been slow to disclose facts ever since the accident occurred. There's clearly the cleanup is going to cost around $500 billion U.S. And that's not just for the site, but for the prefecture of Fukushima as well. But the contamination goes well beyond the prefecture. Like I said, I picked it up in Tokyo, and that's 250 kilometers away. The entire north of the country has a public health hazard here because everyone is exposed to radioactive cesium, radioactive strontium, and other isotopes.
We know the UN Atomic Energy Chief has said that meaningful steps have been taken to strengthen global nuclear safety since Fukushima, while Greenpeace says no lessons have been learned. What's your take?
I co-authored the Greenpeace report, and I agree that no lessons have been learned so far. In America, we're just now getting around to finishing the preliminary studies, but we're allowing these plants to continue running until 2016 before they even make any modifications. So we really haven't learned the serious lessons that Fukushima has taught us worldwide.
Yeah, and just to prove your words, according to the World Nuclear Association, more than 60 reactors are being built in 15 countries, all forging ahead with nuclear power. So why hasn't the specter of Fukushima at least slowed down that growth rate?
Well, it actually has slowed down the growth rate. There were only two new plants started last year. And before that, there were, you know, dozens in the last several years. So clearly countries are having second thoughts. My biggest concern are the developing countries where there's a really close relationship between the people that own the power plant and the supposed regulators, even closer than it was in Japan. So I think we have many accidents waiting to happen in throughout the world. Fukushima was not a one-of-a-kind phenomenon.
All right, Arnold Gunderson, energy advisor at Fairwinds Associates. Thank you very much indeed for sharing your views with us, sir.
Thank you.
And of course, that was Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And we heard before from Arne Gunderson, energy advisor with 39 years of nuclear power engineering experience. He's an independent nuclear engineering and safety expert and has provided testimony on nuclear operations, reliability, and safety and radiation issues to congressional, state legislatures, government agencies throughout the U.S. and also internationally. And we are discussing the one-year anniversary, which happened this past Sunday, of the disaster at Fukushima following the earthquake that happened there, one of the strongest earthquakes ever recorded. And I'd now like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Kevin Camps, who is a longtime leading opponent of government and industry efforts to dump nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain, Nevada. He also has extensive knowledge about the risks of radioactive waste generation and storage at reactor sites and transportation through communities across the country. And Kevin, I think you were on our show the day that the tsunami, the earthquake and the tsunami happened, and we had you on a few times since then. So it's quite right that you be back then as we mark the one-year anniversary with this segment. Welcome back, Kevin Camps.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Now, Kevin, you heard Arne Gunderson earlier. You're with a group called Beyond Nuclear, which is launching a Freeze Our Fukushima's campaign. Tell us, what is that campaign?
Yes, well, as Arne indicated, there are accidents waiting to happen all over the world with nuclear power plants. And here in the United States, we have 23 identically similar designs to Fukushima Daiichi. They're located all over the country, mostly in the eastern half of the country, but they include some of the oldest reactors in the United States and some of the most controversial. So just a short list would include Vermont Yankee, Pilgrim near Boston, And there's a number, there's four actually, just to the west of Chicago. And that's just a short list of these dangerous reactors.
That after an accident like Fukushima, we seem to have learned so little. I mean, in some places we did get a reaction. If you look at what happened in Germany under pressure from the anti-nuclear movement there, you see that they are not only not going to build any new nuclear power plants, but they're going to shut down the ones that they have now. What about what's happening in the United States? Not following suit, it seems.
We have a lot of work to do. In Germany, it really was built on over 30 years of anti-nuclear activism. And one of the epicenters of that was the place called Gorleben, which was targeted by the West German government before reunification for the national radioactive waste dump. Year after year, tens of thousands of protesters would block the streets, would block the rail lines to try to block these radioactive waste shipments to this proposed dump site. And it really boosted the profile of the Green Party at the national level in Germany. And it's, you know, a long history, but combined with the Fukushima catastrophe, that's what it took. And actually, it was, you know, it was the Chancellor Merkel, who's a conservative, who agreed to this phase-out. She had used the previous two or three years of her power to try to promote nuclear power, to try to extend the lives of reactors, and she just saw the writing on the walls. You know, in the immediate aftermath of Fukushima, there were two regional elections in Germany, and the conservatives had ruled in these places like Stuttgart for nearly 60 years. The Green Party won those elections, and so she saw her political survival on the line, and that explains a part of her decision.
Yeah, and really clearly showing people power right there. But, you know, what about, I mean, on the continent of Europe, you have a country like France, very reliant on nuclear power. And doesn't it take really just one Fukushima-type incident, you know, on, you know, anywhere in the world to create major disaster? Because there's also been an impact of Fukushima here in the United States and certainly in the oceans. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, certainly the Chernobyl catastrophe had a huge impact on places like Germany. The French government tried to deny that radioactivity from Chernobyl had reached its country. And then activist nuclear scientists said, well, what about this sample here? And they had to admit the truth. They had gotten fallout, too. So it's kind of similar, really, to the World Wars. I mean, yes, the United States was in the World Wars, but they weren't fought here. And I think that has contributed to our attitude that, you know, war's not all that bad. I'm talking in general. In Europe, I think there's a bit different attitude towards war. They hosted both World Wars, and they remember that, even young people there. Lost relatives. So it's kind of similar with nuclear power. Our biggest disaster here was Three Mile Island, and the power of denial, the power of cover-up, there are thousands of people, thousands of families actually in Pennsylvania downwind who are convinced that their cancers, their health maladies are associated with radioactivity releases from Three Mile Island. But the official U.S. government version is very little radioactivity got out, nobody got hurt, and there's a lot of cover-up. Actually, Arne Gundersen went to Three Mile Island for the 30th anniversary in 2009. He did a reevaluation of how much radioactivity got out, and he put the figure at 100 times more than the U.S. government is willing to admit.
Mm. Yeah, and, you know, of course, there were questions at the time, I don't know if there still are, about radioactivity in milk, perhaps in, you know, some of the seafood, and certainly for the people of Japan, some of the green vegetables, et cetera, growing in the area where there is contamination. And for also for those of us here in California, there's been some concern about some incidences at San Onofre, and this past Sunday, indeed, the Occupy movement, from what I understand, held a protest over there. But were any of these incidences anything that we should be concerned about, Kevin Camps?
Very much so. The one I'm most familiar with from a couple months back was a failure of a steam generator tube in a brand new steam generator. San Onofre had a major organ transplant, and its old degraded steam generators, which are as big as buses, were pulled out, and new ones put in. And this is a very safety-critical part of the plant because it's where the primary cooling water from the core passes through millions of tubes, at least hundreds of thousands of tubes, that are very thin-walled, and they transfer their heat to a secondary loop of water through those thin metal walls. Well, one of these tubes just burst. And if you have a cascading accident where tube after tube breaks like a domino effect, you could have a loss of coolant accident in the core, a meltdown, and if the meltdown's bad enough, it will melt through containment. So this was a brand new steam generator, and you know, that's the thing about nuclear power, is it seems like it's a big experiment that keeps on going because they can't seem to get it right. Here they've had decades and decades of experience. They keep fiddling with things, and it's unsafe even when it's brand new. San Onofre, most of the plant is very old at this point. Those replacement steam generators were brand new, and they failed. So another radioactive bullet dodged. How many of these can we dodge?
Yeah, and for those who say, well, Fukushima, that it happened in Japan, it really can't happen here. I mean, we heard that quite a bit, you know, after Fukushima, when people were, you know, at the highest level of concern. Some of that concern likely has dropped. But is that reality? I mean, that it's something that really couldn't happen here because of the safety measures that have been put in place in the United States?
Not at all. That's all an illusion. What it boils down to, you know, Fukushima was a massive earthquake and a massive tsunami, and that's what took out the primary electrical grid and the emergency backup diesel generators. There are various scenarios for getting there here in the United States, and we've had a number of close calls over the year. I'm right now in Southeast Michigan, near to the Toledo reactor called Davis-Bessey. And back in June of 1998, a tornado funnel cloud passed between the containment building and the cooling tower at Davis-Bessey, took out the primary electrical grid. They turned to their emergency backup diesels, the first one on site, and there are only two. It would not work at all. They had to abandon it. And the second one kept breaking down for 2 days. These were just mechanical problems with their backup power. They had a very dicey 2 days at Davis-Bessey, because as soon as you lose all electricity, it's a race against the clock to get it back. They lost the race at Fukushima Daiichi. They nearly lost the race in Toledo in 1998.
Mm.
And you can just list a long list of such examples in the United States. We've had so many close calls.
So what do you think should be done, and what do you think can be done?
Well, our Freeze Our Fukushimas campaign is calling for the immediate shutdown, permanent shutdown, of these 23 Fukushima Daiichi twin reactors here in the United States. But that would still leave more than 80 operating reactors in the United States. So our next priority would be the Mark IIs, which was a slight improvement, not much, on the Mark Is. That'll take down another several. But even the pressurized water reactors, like San Onofre, like Diablo Canyon in California, for one thing, they are perhaps the most vulnerable to tsunamis in the United States. They're also vulnerable to earthquakes because of where they're located compared to reactors in the east, which were not built with earthquakes in mind. And so, ironically, earthquake risk may be greater in the eastern United States because of the poor workmanship on the reactors. So we're calling for the abolition of nuclear power in the United States, its replacement with efficiency and with renewables. That's exactly what Germany's doing. By 2050, Germany is shooting for a very high percentage of its electricity coming from renewables and supplemented with maximized energy efficiency.
Right. Two very quick things, Kevin. One, what about nuclear waste? I know you have done a lot of work about that. You know, while people are worried about a major event like a Fukushima happening, the issue of nuclear waste is kind of an ongoing day-to-day issue, isn't it?
Well, another advantage of phasing out nuclear power permanently is no more radioactive waste would be generated, and that's the only real solution for the stuff. Once it exists, it's a dilemma what to do with it. It's deadly forever. We have over 70,000 tons altogether in the United States between commercial and military high-level atomic waste. There's a new plan. It's the same old plan, and that is to dump it on vulnerable American reservations out west, places like Savannah Riverside, South Carolina, which is predominantly African American. These would be parking lot dumps waiting for a permanent burial site. So somewhere in the country, and we have no idea where that would be. They haven't given up on Yucca, so they're still trying to dump it at Yucca in Nevada.
Yeah, very, very, a lot of concern there. Kevin, what can people do, people who are really worried and concerned about this but who want to take action? How can they get in touch with your organization, and what are some of the things they can do?
Sure. Well, there's a really dynamic statewide movement in California. So, for example, one of the products of that campaign thus far is a ballot referendum to shut down Diablo Canyon and San Onofre. It's very exciting. Some of the same people are involved that were involved with past shutdowns in California, as at Rancho Seco, even the moratorium back in the 70s that said until you can solve the waste problem, you can't build any new reactors in the state of California. So high hopes there. They need a lot of help to get signatures. There's some great groups across the state. We'd be happy to put people in touch with them. So our website is beyondnuclear.org. And my email is kevin@beyondnuclear.org, and I'd be happy to connect people with the anti-nuclear group closest to them in California.
Yes, could you give that website again, please?
Yep, our website is beyondnuclear.org.
Right, and we would like to post that website on our Twitter feed and Facebook page. So, Kevin Camps, thank you so very much for joining us, and we'll have you back. This is an issue that we definitely want to stay on top of. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to take our station break now, and coming up, the foreclosure crisis. Growing each and every day. There was a protest just this past Sunday on a woman who was deported after her home was foreclosed, Blanca Cardenas, and protests are growing around the country. A lot of concern about that. So we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about, is there any assistance out there for homeowners who are running into some problems? And, you know, is there help available? And how much information does the public have about this? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you missed your chance to become a listener supporter and member during our recent fund drive, you can still log on to kpfk.org and do so. There you can browse through all of the incredible thank you gifts we're offering you. That's kpfk.org.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
On Sunday, May 6th at Club Nokia in downtown L.A., KPFK will present the second annual Hero Awards and Tribute Concert.
The Hero Awards and Tribute Concert honors outstanding artistic achievement and recognizes the artists' contributions to their communities.
The awards and concert at the Club Nokia this year will pay tribute to poet, songwriter, singer, and spoken word artist Gil Scott-Heron.
Honor the prolific achievements of innovative jazz bassist and educator Charlie Hayden.
And recognize the remarkable work of Los Angeles music teacher Fernando Pullum.
KPFK will also present a Lifetime Achievement Award to the iconic folk singer and civil rights activist, Pete Seeger.
The second annual KPFK Hero Awards and Tribute Concert takes place on Sunday, May 6th at 7 p.m.
VIP reception begins at 5 p.m.
at the Club Nokia, part of LA Live, 800 West Olympic Boulevard in downtown LA.
Tickets are available now by going online to kpfk.org and clicking on the Hero Awards and Tribute button.
More information is available by calling KPFK at 818-985-2711, extension 361.
The second annual Hero Awards and Tribute Concert at Club Nokia is a benefit for 90.7 FM KPFK Radio.
Yeah. Right here.
This is John Savage, and you're listening to the Fearless Drive Time Radio, Sojourner Truth, with host Margaret Prescott on Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM.
And the clowns have all gone to bed. You can hear happiness staggering on down the street. Footprints dressed in red. And the wind whispers fairy.
A and Jimi Hendrix, The Wind Cries Mary. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio's KPFK, 90.7 FM in Southern California, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming, podcasting worldwide on the web at kpfk.org. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, download, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. Before we go to the foreclosure story and what resources are or are not available to homeowners in trouble, we'll just quickly go to our weekly Earth Minute.
On March 10th, members of the Stop Sun Corps and Tar Sands Coalition, including the American Indian Movement and other groups, occupied the site of a Sun Corps Energy oil spill on the shore of Colorado's Sand Creek. Sun Corps Energy boasts of being the first corporation to extract the tar sands in Athabasca, leading to the deforestation of thousands of square miles of boreal forest and the destruction of First Nations cultures. Sun Corps produces more than 90,000 barrels of oil per day at its refinery in Colorado. Tessa McLean of the American Indian Movement said, "The oil that's being spilled here came from a First Nations community. My people are suffering there because of the oil we're refining here." Deanna Meyer of Deep Green Resistance Colorado added, "Sun Corps has so poisoned this land that oil is bubbling up through numerous burst subsurface pipelines. Benzene levels in this water are 100 times the safe limit." The oil spill was first reported last November, but is believed to have begun in February 2011. For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
And that was our weekly Earth Minute. This past Sunday morning, activists from Occupy Fights Foreclosures and other community groups held a rally and march for Blanca Cardenas, a recently deported North Hollywood nursing mother and homeowner whose home activists believe was illegally foreclosed on by Bank of America. And also just yesterday afternoon on Monday, there was a protest at the LA County Recorder's office. Again, people who are very, very worried and very concerned about foreclosures, activists along with families who have lost their homes or who are under threat of losing their homes. And on International Women's Day in Oakland, the home of two women's rights activists was actually up for auction. Let us hear a clip from an ABC report on the protest that happened there. You'll hear the voice of Nell Myhan, the activist whose home was about to be auctioned.
"We're interrupting the sale of my home. My partner and I have been in that home for 11 years, and Chase has refused to modify the mortgage. They give me a runaround every time I try to get anything out of them. And so we're here to let them know that our home is not for sale, that we will be fighting them until the end for it, because they have accepted bailout money. Jamie Dimon makes $20.8 million a year. My house is 920 square feet, and I don't understand why Chase needs my house more than I do."
"Now, there's a pretty drastic step that you guys are taking here."
"Well, you know, I've taken a series of incremental steps to try to work with the bank, and the bank has been unwilling to work with me. And at this point, they're trying to sell my home, which is fairly drastic, so I'm taking a drastic step to stop them."
"Okay. So are you still in contact with the bank? Is there any..."
"I was in contact with the bank day before yesterday. They referred me to the trustee who's responsible for the foreclosure sale. They gave me the wrong name of the person who's supposed to be covering the case. So when I called the trustee, they were, 'Oh, no, that's not the person. There's another person. Let me give you another number.' That's the runaround. I got it all through the foreclosure process, and I'm getting it now through the process of trying to get a loan modification, and now I'm getting it through the foreclosure process. And it's outrageous because there are millions of people across the country who are impacted, millions of households. And in San Francisco, the city assessor found that in 84% of the foreclosures, there are clear indications of fraud. Absolutely clear, unequivocal. In 99% of foreclosures, there's at least one irregularity that points toward fraud. So I want to know, why is Chase continuing to foreclose? And why is Freddie Mac, who's funded by the 99%, using our money to put us out of our homes? It's an outrage."
"What do you feel people here looking to buy your house that are just like circling around?
You know, the main people I'm looking at is the 99% here to help me defend my home, because the 1% is outnumbered and they are on the run. And they should know it, because so many people are impacted across the country. It's time for a national moratorium against foreclosures. It's time for them to stop putting people out of their homes and leaving our homes empty and us homeless.
You plan on doing this again? If you're able to introduce it today, you plan on doing this again if it goes up for auction?
I plan on using whatever tactics are necessary to save my home.
All righty, and that was a protest that took place on International Women's Day, protesting the auction of the home of two women's rights activists. So many families are in trouble right now and not knowing where to turn. And we're posing the question, is there, what help is there out there for homeowners who are facing some problems? And I'd like to welcome to Sojourner Truth, Diane Richardson, who is director of the Keep Your Home California. Diane Richardson, and thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Diane Richardson, the title, Keep Your Home California, is very hopeful. I was very hopeful when I saw it. And in talking to a number of people, I found that people generally don't know about the program. So we wanted to bring this information to the airwaves for you to share with us some of the assistance that's out there for homeowners. First of all, for homeowners who are unemployed, apparently there is a mortgage assistance program, and these are federal dollars. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
And tell us about that program of the Unemployment Mortgage Assistance Program.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I do think it's really important that we get the word out about these programs, and people are so overwhelmed with information and so many conflicting programs, and they're not sure which ones are safe and which ones are not. So I really do appreciate you helping us educate people as to which programs they can turn to. The unemployment program that you talk about, the Unemployment Mortgage Assistance Program, is a program that we have for homeowners who are currently collecting unemployment benefits from EDD, and if their bank is participating in the program, we have a list of participating lenders on our website, they can apply for this program, and we can help them by paying their mortgage for up to $3,000 a month for up to 9 months.
Now, are some of the major banks that have been involved in this foreclosure crisis, you've got, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JPMorgan Chase, et cetera, are they part of this program, or are they the smaller, banks that perhaps have been less involved?
Under the Keep Your Home California program, we offer four different programs, and virtually we have about 65 lenders that are participating in at least two of them, and just about all of them participate in the unemployment program.
Right.
I would say all of them participate.
So people who are getting an unemployment check right now, who are homeowners,
right,
what should they do?
Well, I would recommend that they take a look at our website. It's www.keepyourhomecalifornia.org. We have a lot of really great information there about our various programs. We have a very short, about maybe 5-minute video right on the front page that walks a homeowner through the process and lets them know sort of what they can expect when they call. And, then I would recommend that they either send a text. We have a text service, so you can text 55678, text the word HOME to 55678, and you'll get a bounce back with information about our programs. Or if you think you're ready to make the call, we do have a toll-free number, and that's 888-954-5337.
Yeah, could you give that number again?
Absolutely. It's 888-954-5337.
Okay, now how quickly can people who call that number or who apply for this program expect to get assistance for those who are eligible?
Right. The unemployment program is actually one of our, it has one of the quickest turnaround times. What will happen is when a homeowner calls, we take some information over the phone, we sort of create an application over the phone, and then the homeowner is required to submit certain information to verify that information. And a lot of it depends on how quickly that information is submitted. But it's generally, 30 to 45 days.
30 to 45 days. Now, for homeowners who may be facing foreclosure, and indeed, like Nell Myhand, whose home may be going up for auction, once they apply for this program, is there any hope of a moratorium on the action until at least this program is, kicks in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we have agreements with the lenders that are participating. And once we actually, get all of the completed documents, we submit an electronic record to the bank, and they have to accept that record. And once they do that, they are agreeing, to not take any further action. In a case like the one that you've just talked about, though, the ladies that you had on just before me,
yeah,
if they're already, so far down the road that their home is going to auction, their bank probably won't work with us. So what I would say to people is please don't wait until you get into that situation. If you're concerned and you're struggling, give us a call and figure out if there's something that we can do to help before you get to that point.
Right. But what if, in this particular instance, and I imagine there are other people in that situation, the auction was called off and it seems as though Chase may be interested now in working on some type of loan modification. Is there any hope for people who are in that situation through this Keep Your Home California?
We have had situations where banks have agreed to, postpone a sale date,
mm-hmm.
and they give the borrower a letter, and the borrower gives that to us as part of their package so that we know that, we can try to work with their bank going forward. So it's, banks do quite often, they are willing to postpone the actions if they think that there's, hope on the horizon. But again, if it's, the day before your sale or the day of your sale, quite frankly, if it's within a week of your sale, the banks are more difficult to work with.
Yeah. And tell us about some of your other programs. You've got one called the Transition Assistance Program. And what is that?
Well, the Transition Assistance Program is a program that is for families who, quite honestly, have made a decision that they're just not going to be able to keep their home. And so they're able to work out either a short sale or a deed in lieu transaction with their bank. And, anytime you have to move, there are costs associated with that. You've got to establish, you've got first and last month's rent. You've got to turn on your utilities. You've just got, regular moving expenses. So under the Transition Assistance Program, we'll pay a borrower up to $5,000. To help them get transitioned into a new home.
Right. And what about the Mortgage Reinstatement Assistance Program?
That program was specifically created when we first started talking about these programs and we knew we were going to get these funds. We met with people up and down the state to just sort of determine what the needs were. And one of the things that we heard repeatedly was that there were a lot of people that had suffered at some kind of a hardship. Either they'd lost their job or they'd had some unknown medical expenses come up. And they were now past that, and they were in a position where they could make their payment going forward, but they couldn't get caught up on the piece that they felt where they fell behind. So the Mortgage Reinstatement Program was created to help those people who have overcome their hardship get caught up so that they could either resume their payments at where they were before, or if they're able to negotiate a modification with their bank, they can get a more affordable payment, will help them get caught up. That program currently pays up to $20,000 to help a homeowner get caught up if they have a sustainable payment going forward.
Right, and that would include a loan that has been modified.
It could include a loan, right.
Right, and the principal reduction program.
The principal reduction program is a program that we created. We know we have a lot of underwater borrowers in California, people who owe more than their home is worth, and they're getting a little desperate. And again, all of these programs require that borrowers have suffered some kind of an economic hardship. It's not so just being underwater by itself isn't a hardship. But if you've suffered some kind of an economic hardship and you're underwater, we'll pay up to $50,000 to help bring your principal balance down, and we expect your lender to match that dollar for dollar. So, for example, if you owed $300,000, we'd put in $50,000, your lender would put in $50,000, and they'd modify your loan to a new balance of $200,000.
Right. Now, what about, I mean, there was a Los Angeles Times article on this, you're likely aware of it, and they talked about California, Nevada, and Arizona devising a plan to provide mortgage relief funds to struggling borrowers only if the banks and loan investors agree to reduce the principal owed on the loan by a matching amount. So, again, it's sort of up to the bankers. I mean, can anything be done to really push these bankers? I mean, after all, they got bailed out by taxpayers' money.
Well, you know, I beat my head against the wall about this every day, but, you know, we think about this constantly. And we actually, worked very closely with Nevada and Arizona when these programs were created, because we thought that we were offering banks a pretty good deal. You know, we were willing to meet them halfway. We haven't had the amount of participation that we had hoped to have.
Right.
And we do go back and evaluate these programs constantly, and we'll probably be proposing some changes sometime in the near future. Another thing that's been that's made the program, to answer your original question, we can't force the banks to participate. I don't have any authority to do that. So I've got to dangle something in front of them that they want. We do go back and we do make changes periodically. We've made several changes already, and I would anticipate we'll be making some more changes in the coming months to try to make these programs more attractive to lenders to
right.
help their borrowers out.
Well, Diane Richardson, we want to continue to bring information about this to our listeners and also to get some reaction from our listeners who have applied to these programs, what their experience has been. So we will have you back or someone else from Keep Your Home California. Thank you so very much for joining
sure.
us.
Thank you again for having me.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and we are discussing the foreclosure crisis and what assistance may be out there for homeowners. And we just heard about a program called Keep Your Home California. I'd now like to welcome to Sojourner Truth Paul Leonard, who is the California Director of the Center for Responsible Lending. Paul Leonard, thank you so very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Paul Leonard, we just spoke with Diane Richardson from Keep Your Home California. The programs she outlined sound well, you know, sound in some ways pretty good. Like there is some federal dollars out there through money left over from TARP, I understand, or via the Obama administration, some way, somehow. There is money available out there to help homeowners. Now, nobody I knew who was a homeowner and who was unemployed or in trouble knew anything about these programs. But then again, that's not a scientific sample, people that I know. But there was a Los Angeles Times article on March the 3rd that says that this program is providing little relief. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a combination of probably two things. One is that the banks have not been quick to embrace these programs. They have not willingly gone out of their way to ensure that borrowers are participating in these programs and help to promote these programs. In many cases, in particular, the program that allows borrowers to reduce their principal balances, most of the big banks are not even participating in the program.
Mm.
So there's one issue is bank participation, and I think the other issue that you rightly mentioned is kind of the overall level of awareness of the programs and kind of the marketing. I have tremendous respect for the work that the California Housing Finance Agency has been doing to try and get these programs up and running, but it's been a real struggle to get the level of attention and advertising to really penetrate all of the other information that's out there in a way that makes sure that borrowers know what programs are out there to help them And makes it easy to enlist and get the support that the programs have to offer.
Yeah, you know, this story really caught my eye. I mean, I live in inner city Los Angeles over in East LA. So many homes in my neighborhood and other neighborhoods up for foreclosure. I know that people did not know anything about these programs, and it doesn't really seem to be that complicated. For example, when you go and you apply for unemployment, everybody who applies for unemployment should be asked if they're a homeowner and just be given information about this program. Banks, when they know that homeowners are running into some trouble or falling behind, should be sending this information out to homeowners. I mean, I just can't understand why this is happening and, you know, more publicity isn't happening around these programs. It's unconscionable, well, you know, I think.
The way the sort of programs has worked over the course of this foreclosure crisis is that there is a flurry of news when the programs are initially announced, and then after that, the programs generally sort of fly below the radar screen, and the resources that are out in communities, particularly the housing counseling agencies that are operated and certified by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, are really a critical resource for folks in the community to call. You can go to HUD.gov and find a list of certified HUD housing counseling agencies, and those are the organizations that are really best equipped to help homeowners navigate the broad array of programs that are available now or will be available in the coming months.
Yeah, you know, honestly, people who contact, you know, go through these agencies, you know, they've reported that they really get a runaround and they don't end up with the kind of information that Diane Richardson gave over the phone. I mean, what do you think of the idea of unemployment offices and banks giving out this information to homeowners?
Well, look, I think that, this information should be readily available from multiple sources.
And, yeah.
And again, I read the article in the LA Times and was aghast at the idea that they couldn't reach the cooperation with the unemployment agency in order to let everybody who gets unemployment insurance know that this is these are available programs to help you save your homes. Similarly with the banks, but I think that there are today and in the coming months a whole nother array of programs that could be helping borrowers through the recently announced settlement agreement with the Attorney General Kamala Harris as part of a national Attorney General's settlement agreement that was announced last month. The details and the language was just introduced, was filed with federal court yesterday, that will provide another array of different programs and opportunities for borrowers whose loans are serviced by five of the largest banks in the country, so that it's not just a single set of specific programs, but the reality is that the government is understanding more in the last 6 or 8 months that more needs to be done, and so they've come up with a bunch of new programs that are available to assist homeowners who are in default or at risk of default, for the first time in the last few months. There are a significant push to make principal reduction programs available that will help to lower a borrower's actual balance of their loan rather than just simply reducing their interest rate.
Right. Now, you know, Paul Leonard, I've heard a lot of criticism by people who've been part of fighting foreclosures and protesting foreclosures, et cetera, about this agreement that Kamala Harris signed. And in fact, when she signed the agreement, there were protesters who were saying that it really provides very, very little in terms of what the reality of what homeowners actually need. And it does seem as though all of this is very slow out of the gate, because the banks, when they were bailed out, that wasn't slow out of the gate. But meanwhile, you have hundreds and thousands of homeowners that are in trouble. And some way, somehow, all of this seems to be slow out of the gate. I must say that I thought the unemployment mortgage assistance program, where people could get up to $3,000 a month to help with, to pay their mortgage. In fact, the transition assistance program, mortgage reinstatement assistance program, some of this actually are very practical measures that would indeed be very useful to homeowners. But what do you think can be done to really hold these banks to account, to keep these banks accountable, in particular those that are resisting participating in, like, the principal reduction program and some of these other programs?
Well, look, I think that the state Keep Your Home California program has very little leverage over the banks to make them participate in these programs. I think that Ms. Richardson was quite clear that she does not really have the hammer available to make sure that the banks participate.
Who does? Who has that hammer?
Well, on the other hand, I think that for the first time, the Attorney General settlement offers really concrete enforcement strategies that can make sure that the promises of principal reduction and reforms in the servicing process that are promised in the settlement agreement will actually be delivered upon through the combination of having a national independent monitor that will make sure that the banks do what they're supposed to be doing, a California-specific monitor to be named that will give, again, support the national monitor and ensure that the banks are meeting specific dollar and numbers of households that are targeted to be assisted with.
Yeah, Paul Leonard, are you saying then that a process of accountability was set up in this basically it was a kind of a settlement that Kamala Harris signed that could act as the hammer on the banks? Because that's really what people are interested in. I mean, it just seems as though these banks could do whatever the heck they like, you know, never mind the impact, you know, on people's lives.
Yes. The settlement does not promise that absolutely every borrower who is eligible and deserves support will get it. But the settlement does include specific dollar amounts of loan modifications, and particularly for the first time, specific targeted amount of principal reduction that is expected to occur in California that will be reviewed and enforced by a monitor, an independent monitor, that in the failure to meet specific dollar targets that are included in the settlement will result in cash fines of the banks that
right.
will be enforced by a federal judge.
Paul, we literally have about 30 seconds, and can Cordray, who is Obama's, you know, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, can they do anything to really discipline these banks? You know what I mean? It's because all of this sounds all well and good, but, you know, having been out there and talking with homeowners and seeing the frustration and seeing the tears and families being ripped apart, you know, it just seems as though somebody should do something. And if this is a federal program, unemployment offices are part of a government program. So I don't understand why pressure can't be put on the unemployment offices to say you must give this information out to people who are unemployed and who are homeowners.
I agree. I think that there is more that can be done to ensure that unemployment offices coordinate, probably more through the state level and through the Department of Labor here in the state and the employment EDD, the
right.
agency that oversees the unemployment agencies.
Okay.
I don't believe that Mr. Cordray has responsibility over that, but I think that the CFPB will play an important role in making sure that the servicing reforms, the processes that the banks follow in terms of how they work with borrowers and trying to negotiate loan modifications, that servicing standards will be established nationwide,
okay.
not just for the five banks.
Paul Leonard, we're going to need to have you all back because we are literally way over time here. So I'm going to have to just quickly thank you for being on our show. and to thank everybody who helped with today's show, Teddy Robinson, Teresa McGee, Azeem Khan, and Sarah Shakur. You're going to stay tuned for Uprising with Sonali Kolhatkar, Sojourner Truth. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.